Teacher, what must I do to gain eternal life? The world-renowned poet and playwright, Archibald MacLeish, once was invited to participate in a special worship service at Harvard University's Memorial Chapel. He was to lead the students in morning prayer. But MacLeish refused on the ground that his religious skepticism made him unfit for the assignment. But a few hours later, he telephoned the person at the university who had invited him to say that he had changed his mind. He said that he would accept the invitation. "I'll do it," he said, "but one thing must be clear. I'm not at all convinced that Christianity has all the answers that we're looking for, but I do think it does have the right questions. Now, we people of the faith, we are convinced that Christianity does offer the ultimate solution to the riddle of life itself. But before we have a solution, we must have a problem. We all want answers because we all have questions. And in that sense, Archibald MacLeish and his observation happen to be profoundly true. Christianity has the right questions. Because running through all of our religious history are all of the great questions of humankind. Our entire religious tradition evolves through a seeking, a searching, a questioning people, beginning with Genesis, right on through to the last book of the Bible, St. John. The entire Bible is a story of the people's quest for answers. Who made the world? Where did we come from? Why are we here? Whither are we going? Why? Asks the psalmist. Why, O Lord, do you stand aloof? Why must I go about in mourning with the enemy oppressing me? My God, why? Why have you forsaken me? Someone has said that a perfect example of peace of mind is a cow standing under a shade tree in a pleasant meadow on a summer day, chewing her cud. But the peace of mind that Jesus offers us as the answer to today's gospel question is not intended for cows. When Jesus answers the question, "Teacher, what must we do to gain eternal life?" He is talking to human beings. He's talking to me and to you. He tells us to love God and our neighbor, and then he goes on to relate the story of the Good Samaritan. And when Jesus tells us that story, we can all rightly say in our hearts, yes, in a sense, that is all that we need to know about gaining eternal life. That God does love us, the members of the human family, so much that he has provided us with our ultimate fulfillment in his eternal kingdom of peace. We know that Jesus died on the cross to bring that message to us as clearly as it could be made. And if our Christian faith is a faith in that Jesus, and it is, then faith in that Jesus is indeed the answer to our riddle of what life is all about. But here's the paradox. It is the very person of faith. It is the very person who has the answers, who continues to ask the questions. We all try, as well as we can, to do God's will. We try to express our love for God through our love for our neighbor. And we do try to serve other people in their needs. We try to show that we do care, that we have concern and compassion for others. We try to understand them. We try to heal. We try to reconcile. And then it happens. All of you are old enough to have had the experience. An accident occurs, an illness, a death in the family, a bitter disappointment of some kind, and all of a sudden our world simply falls apart all around us. And out of our faith, all we can do is cry out, along with the psalmist and with Jesus on the cross, why? Why? My God, why have you forsaken me? During the past year and longer, so many people have come to me and asked me that same question. Why has this happened to them? It's a question that I myself ask at least 4 or 5 times a day, having heard of the problems of other people and experiencing my own. What about all those people, and what about us? All of those people who come to us with their problems, who go on battling their own personal problems that obviously are so very terribly important to them. Those people, we can tell by the expression on their face and their tone of voice, are already in a depression or on the way there. It's very difficult, in case you don't know it, to try to be spiritual, to try to be concerned about other people when you're not feeling so well yourself. This is true. And yet, this happens to be one of the insights of people of faith and prayer, that the very dark night of the soul, of the spirit, always is part of our personal spiritual journey. The older we grow, the more mature we become, we discover the truth that these periods of darkness, the times of loneliness, the long stretches of silence, the emptiness, the sheer emptiness of depression, all of this actually is an experience of the mystery of the living God in our lives. Our God is active in those experiences. Our God is present and dynamic in those moments and days of darkness, always mysteriously bringing us closer to himself by cleansing us of self. This mystery that we call God is truly in these empty moments, in these voids, in our times of utter, utter despair. Those experiences are a crucible for filling us more fully, for emptying us of self, in order that eventually we might become more filled when we break through and begin to understand and see life anew with a new depth and a new awareness that was never available before. Our God is in suffering, and suffering is in God. God is in process and in change because of our prayers and our pains. Our God is in our suffering, and our suffering is in God. We can say that because the Spirit of the risen Christ lives in us during good moments and bad times, and we go on living in the risen Christ, sufferings and all.